From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beater.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
Welcome to Defrag Tools, the show that takes you inside Windows internals and Microsoft internals. We're out here in building Studio E today, another location shoot.
It does have a number, but...
Does it?
Yeah,
I don't know.
A to G have... Oh, there's letters rather than numbers. But they do have a number.
They call it Studio E. It says on the wall there, Studio E. Yeah. We are here to talk to a Microsoft legend. We've got Larry Osterman last time. He's a Microsoft legend, but Raymond Chen, arguably even more of a legend. I don't know. We'll let them duke it out, but they're both pretty cool. They've been around a long time.
Done a lot to do with the shell and Explorer, stuff like that. And it's been a staple of the UI side of Windows for a couple of decades.
Let's go find Raymond.
Yeah.
All right. Knock on the door. Right. Let's do this.
We're good?
All right.
So there's a reference sign. We'll find out what that's all about.
Raymond Chen.
Man.
Channel 9 invading you.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my gosh. Defrag Tools. Coming on in.
So, welcome to Defrag Tools.
You guys just barge on in.
Yeah.
You knock on the door and then barge on in after I say to come on in.
Yeah.
Well,
and somehow you got a microphone on you.
That's how you guys operate.
He just comes to work with a microphone on every day because that's just.
He's been waiting.
It's right.
You never know.
Just in case.
I was warned you guys.
Camera crews
show up. So, yeah, it's like a reality show. There's like the new Microsoft reality show coming out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really, really boring.
Exactly. So, we have to ask, what's with the reference sign down at the bottom of your window?
Okay, well, there's a mall, the Remen Town Square Mall, and Borders, the bookstore, went out of business a few years ago.
Sure, yeah.
So they were selling everything.
Okay.
And my colleague in the next office over went over. So first they sold all the old books, whatever. Then they started selling furniture. And so he went down and they were selling the signs over each of the sections of the bookstore. So like
you could
buy the teen romance sign.
That would have been awesome.
So he bought the reference sign and put it in my office because that's what people use me for.
Right on.
Yes, you are the reference for Microsoft.
Very cool.
So talking about that, who are you? So what's
my name
history?
My name is Raymond Chen. I started Microsoft in 92, I guess, depending on how you count.
Yeah.
My first actual day here was back in 89, but that was just as a college student.
Oh, like an intern thing.
That was an intern thing. When I started, I got a nice window office as an intern, which is kind of unusual, but then I paid for it because then I didn't get another window office for like, 7-8 years.
Right.
When I started in 92, I joined the, back then it was called the DOS 6 team.
Okay.
It eventually became DOS 7 and then became Windows 95. And then from there, I stayed in systems. I was in, I did a little work in DirectX. Then I came over to the Windows User Interface team and late 2000 or so, and I've been here ever since. So, user interface stuff, things people click on, and making user interface work.
So it's primarily like the shell and like Windows Explorer and shell stuff.
Yeah, Windows Explorer shell stuff.
Property pages and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, you just like pulling out all that really old stuff.
But you probably still get
it. It was so cool 20 years ago.
And oh man, so what is it that you work on now? Still, it's different now. It's still user interface stuff, or
still using user interface stuff,
but not exciting property pages anymore.
Not exciting property pages. It's exciting infrastructure for the new start menu, infrastructure for our new user experiences. All the fancy new stuff.
Very cool.
And off on the side, I run the samples, the Windows 10 samples.
Right on.
Oh, is it like the SDK samples?
SDK samples. I'm the gatekeeper for the SDK samples.
So do you tend to control other people writing it, or do you actually tend to write the samples yourself?
Other people write them, and then I come in and I edit them, I'm a harsh editor.
The samples do have a style to them, a very specific style. Has there ever been a thought about process about changing the style, where the brackets are, and should an if have a space after it, and all that type of stuff? That type of minutiae?
Yeah, there's the... It's tricky writing samples because you want to demonstrate how to use the technology, but you don't want to get all distracted with other stuff. So it's like, our SDK samples are pretty bare bones. It's like, oh, here's how you make an in-app purchase. You call this function, and then you call that function. You have to handle these error codes. Mm. And so, but the sample is not going to set up this beautiful MVVM and, you know, have a, you know, this complicated database for keeping it, because if you do that, nobody's going to read the sample, because they're going to spend all the time trying to untangle how you set up your view model and miss the three lines of code that's actually the important part of the sample.
Yeah, you tend just to fall back to like a printf to the screen.
Yeah, it's like printf, good job, you got it.
We achieved it. We achieved the goal, yeah.
And the hope is that when you put in your real app, you'll make it look pretty, because...
So we've talked about this in the past. So obviously the SDK samples have to be isolated, right? So there's a complete absence of framework, and that's by design, right? That's
well, there's the SDK samples, like the ones in the Windows Universal App samples, and for the most part, their framework, you know, XAML, CX, or and C Sharp or WinJS for JavaScript apps. Mm. So we've sort of relied on those things, but there's no jQuery, there's no, you know, any of those, you know, asm.js crazy, you know, frameworky stuff, because we try to work with stuff that we know everybody will understand. And you're certainly welcome to pull in jQuery for your app, but we're just not going to make everybody learn jQuery just to learn how to make an in-app purchase.
Yeah, and in Win32 world, it's more or less bigger, hefty C++ frameworks, right, that aren't there. So you won't see ATL, you won't see MFC.
So in general, for Win32 samples, the gulf between sort of, you know, the bare bones writing, like here are the calls you need to make to get your sample to work, and here's like all the normal infrastructure that people carry around with them, is much wider. Mm. Like, you know, C Sharp does a lot of stuff that's pretty good, and a lot of people do their code in C Sharp without a lot of heavy frameworks in the way, but frameworks helping to support their product.
I know personally, when it comes to interfaces, like COM interfaces, I very rarely actually tend to use like CCOM point or anything like that from ATL to worry about the reference counting. I'll actually do the releases myself. And I tend to do a very pure, a lot of people don't like that approach. They think, you know.
Yeah, I bet you also, when you get up in the morning, you like pour the cereal out and sort them by size.
Well, that may be true. There may be some OCD issues.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's a little OCD
you're
there. Kinda,
yeah. Well, my point of view is if you're paying attention and writing the code right, you're not going to miss it. And if you look at, if you're at the end of the program and do a teardown and it doesn't tear down, then
you miss something.
You miss something, right?
Okay.
Okay. And you
are for punishment.
Yeah,
here.
If you're not careful, you eat your cereal in the wrong order. Stuff happens.
That's right. Glutton for punishment.
Maybe I need to review my stuff.
but that is a tension, though. Is like in if you go to MSDN, there's some sample code like demonstrating how to use an API or some very short sample programs. They tend not to use frameworks. They tend to do it your way, with just like, hey, we're just a manually call release, and we're going to keep track in our head exactly which is the right place, where is the right place to put it.
Yeah.
And it's not because the sample writers have OCD, although I'm sure a lot of them do.
Yeah.
The reason there is just to not get all the not to get all frameworky, because it's like, okay, we're going to write the sample and we're going to use ATL. It's like, but I don't use ATL. I use, you know, I use comdef.h. And so all of a sudden, this sample is like written in a language you don't understand.
Yeah.
And so the samples tend to write to lowest common denominators. Like, you know what? We're going to call heap allocate instead of new.
Yeah.
Because everybody can figure out what heap allocate does. And if you're not a C++ expert, there might be some subtleties of new that elude you. That's why like samples tend to explicitly call zero memory to zero something out, rather than using empty curly braces, some secret language magic sauce.
Do the samples tend to avoid exceptions? Is that one of the metaphors that they purposely don't use? Or is that something that doesn't really apply that much?
We're talking which kinds of samples?
Or just any type of code sample that we have, SDK sample, whatever, that, you know, using exception as a way of producing error codes. Like, it's the argument between, should I throw an exception or should I return an H result? Is it more the problem domain you're in that dictates that type of approach?
Yeah, different worlds have different policies. Like if you're doing C Sharp, right, exceptions, great, we love exceptions.
Yeah.
Right. If you're doing JavaScript, exceptions kinda a little hackier. if you're doing like plain C programming, that's just like, forget it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so
this is sort of just the dominant paradigm of the, you sort of have the to, world that you're living
you have,
in.
You have to sort of fit the language you're writing for.
Yeah.
And certainly, like in the new Windows Universal App platform, we try to avoid using exceptions as a way of communicating normal activity. That's just sort of been our general design principle, because what happens is if exceptions come up a lot, then people put up, I'll catch every exception and handle it. It's like, no, that exception meant that you're in really, really bad shape and should just go away.
Yeah. Out of memory is out of memory, people.
Out of memory is out of memory. There's really not much, unless you were like allocating like 20 meg of memory to do a bitmap or something. It's like, if you couldn't allocate 20 bytes of memory, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
There's really no point trying to recover from that. You should just go away and start up again, because you probably just have a memory leak in your program, and trying to limp along is not going to help.
Cut your losses, get out of there.
Well, the problem is that if you try to catch the exception and do something intelligent with it, intelligent in quotes, usually what happens is that your app is now in some weird, untested, inconsistent state, and then you get another crash much later on, and then you're looking at that crash and like, how is this possible? How come my variable says I have two copies of blah, and then I look in the container and there's only one? How is that possible? And the answer is like, well, somebody failed somewhere else and didn't unwind everything perfectly, or you got in some weird state.
Yeah, you get half a widget.
Right, so and then you end up scouring your entire code trying to find the thing. It's like, no, it never worked. There's really no reasonable way of recovering from this. Just die now, and then you can study. It's like, oh, I'm not handling this error case. And instead of discovering the problem, 5 minutes later when the stack is gone.
Then the poor sap like me that gets the support case and like, here's this crash dump. Just fail when the problem happens, not 5 minutes later in a weird way, right?
And same for me with Bang Analyzer. It's like, give it to me at the point in time.
Yeah. Just tell me what went wrong when it went wrong. Yeah. And don't try to like, it's like your 2-year-old who breaks something and thinks they can fix it. It's like, no.
Hide it behind my back.
And then a week later, you find the egg hiding under the sofa, and you're like,
you smell it,
The closer you can make the cause and effect, the happier I am in particular. So.
Yes,
I mean, absolutely. Certainly from a developer's point of view, you want to see the failure when it happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. So one of the main impetuses of seeing you is actually to attack you about this thing. So
I didn't realize.
I get to plug my book.
Your book. Well, actually, this is in Japanese.
I was going to point out that the blog that it's based on, which is the old new thing.
Yeah.
So before we jump in the book, which is about the series,
what an amazing coincidence that a copy of the book was right here on my desk.
How about that? Yeah. And this was even translated into Japanese. I had no idea.
This is the Japanese translation.
So very cool. blogs.msdn.com/b/old-new-thing.
Just type old new thing into your favorite search engine and it'll
show
up.
Be the first thing.
So tell us about what the blog is, what its content is, what's the audience.
And how did it get started too?
The blog started in 2003, I think. This is when blogging was starting to sort of catch on. There were a couple of early adopters inside Microsoft.
Yeah.
And Brad Abrams, who was sort of one of our early adopter type people, basically just told me, Raymond, you should start a blog. He basically just told me to do it. So I'm like, okay. He's like, I don't know, maybe I'll practice, I'll like do an internal blog for a while, get the hang of it. He's like, no, just go.
But I feel you had sort of an internal blog before, because I remember
URL's awesome. What's the internal URL where you?
Oh, I don't know.
Stuff staged up. It's like Sanctity or something.
It doesn't have a fancy name at all.
Yes, it does.
It's my name. It's Whack Whack Raymond C.
Yeah. You had a server for a long, long time, sort of internally, that just had stuff.
Yeah,
blog-ish.
It's still there. It moves
Is
around
it still
inside.
There? I was sort of blog-ish. Yeah, so the word blogging back then, but.
Abject. Yeah. Abject. Yeah, that one finally died. That was a 486DX with 8 meg of memory. And it served as a web server for way longer than anybody used a machine of that quality.
Nice. Okay, so that's what that was sort of blog-ish. There wasn't really blogs, but that,
it was my own little website where I put stories.
Was that before Old New Thing, or was that?
Yeah, that was that started back in like 95, 96. Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, so then Old New Thing.
So you were primed. You were kind of in the zone.
Yeah, but it wasn't a blog. It was just a place where I kept. I put stuff.
Yeah. As you did.
It's more like a OneNote.
This was just like basically where I kept track of stuff.
It was how webs.
Anyway, so I kind of got on a tangent there. So
yeah,
you got asked to make the blog. What's its focus? I mean, what's the content focus?
The great thing is, the first your first question is supposed to be, where did you get that name from? And the answer
the
is,
thing, yes.
I got that name after thinking about it for about 10 seconds.
Wow.
Because I'm like, okay, I'll start it up, and I put it up, and then it's like, oh, go to this internal website. You can set up a blog. Okay, click. And then one of the questions on the thing is like, what's the name of your blog? I'm like, oh, this thing needs a name.
Oh,
rats.
Man.
So after 10 seconds, I'm like, oh, okay, I'll put that in there. So that name was the result of an intense survey and focus group that lasted 10 seconds, consisting of people in this room sitting in a chair.
Yeah.
Right.
I chose the name because I wanted it to be about old stuff, because I'm sort of a Luddite. Mm-hmm. So, all this fancy dancy new, unfrozen caveman programmer kind of thing. It's like, oh, you're lights and managed code frighten and scare me.
Yeah.
I figured that, if I wrote mostly about old stuff, it would be stuff that I knew a lot better. Stuff that nobody else is writing about, because most people blog about the hot new thing.
Yeah.
So if I blog about the old and busted thing, I got less competition.
That's true.
This is how we're taking the defrag tool.
Yeah, we're kind of going this route now too. We're out of new things to talk about.
You're out of new things, so we'll just keep covering the old stuff because nobody else is covering it.
Yeah. Until 100, after 100 episodes, we kind of ran out of the new stuff.
So I'm old junk. Yeah. You're rummaging through your topic drawer.
No, we've been trying to get
and
you
on like,
this.
And you're like, oh, maybe we get that Raymond guy. We ran out of all the cool people.
No, Larry's older than you, so he's super old.
No, well, you're legendary. We've been trying to get you on the show forever.
Yeah, you've been dodging us.
Nobody ever told me.
Oh, well,
I've just been blowing you guys off all this time.
That's pretty good. Yeah, we just need to be more persistent.
We don't want to be honest about this, but yes.
Right on. So you decide to blog about old stuff and then
older stuff because it's like, oh, I can dig in, find some old APIs that still work that nobody's using. Write up a proper introduction as to how they work.
And I think a lot of people also
I started out with a 10-part series on how to use scroll bars.
This sounds a lot like how we do defrag tools. Yeah.
So I think the thing I like about the name is a lot of people think the newest thing is new when it's actually already been done in the past. It's already been looked at, and those ideas have already been thought about. I mean, it's very rare that you actually have something that's truly new. It's just usually a rehash of something that's come before it.
You're sort of like going literature seminar on me. It's like, well, when it's
there are
new,
no
like,
new
what is
ideas.
There? What is? Have you ever seen the inside of a brick? Because whenever you cut it open, it's no longer the inside.
Oh man, it's philosophical.
Yeah. You're just going deep on me.
Yeah. No, it's true though. There are no new ideas. Like really, everything's a remix of an old idea, right? Everything is a remix.
I find a lot when I'm about to go code something, I'll see there's a sample, and you've blogged about it 4 years ago, right? The thing that I think is current and is needed right now actually has been worked out 4 years ago, and you just grab your sample code, plump it in.
Add error checking.
Add some framework nuance to it if it's not me. And then, away you go. I think it's a very good reference even for now, because the fundamentals built years ago still apply.
That's actually one of the reasons, one of the reasons I convinced myself that it was worth having the blog is that it let me write about things and answer questions that I get asked a lot. And so I get to put the answer up.
Yeah.
And then the next time I get asked a question, I can just send them a link.
Yeah.
And sometimes they will find it and they don't even have to ask me the question. Right. They're just like, oh, yeah, I found the answer. Thanks.
It's like a
sometimes I get a thank you message saying, I was trying to do X and I searched for it and I found exactly what on your blog. Thanks for writing it 5 years ago.
Yeah. This stuff comes up all the time. Somebody will ask me something and I'll finally go do a web search because I don't know. Oh, look, Raymond wrote about it in 2011.
We hit this a couple, 5 episodes ago when we did the app path thing.
Yeah.
We noticed that if you typed Excel in at the command prompt, it didn't work.
But
in Shell,
it works for Windows Run.
We were just, you just ran across and you're like, how come that actually works? I don't know. So we researched it, and of course you
just read
about it.
Well, we didn't hit your article because we used the wrong keyword and it just didn't pop up your thing. But as soon as we had the word app path, boom, there it was, number one hit.
Like number one
we just had that wrong keyword to find the blog. But then once we were there, there it all is.
There it is.
Here's the reference MSDM article you should read as well, and blah, blah, blah. It's all written down.
It's all there. It's a great reference. All right, so you've been blogging for a while, right? And then this book came out. What happened there? How did that come about?
Yeah, the book is another example of me doing something because somebody told me. On the blog, people kept saying, you should write a book.
Yeah.
Like, okay, fine, I wrote about it. They say, if you should write a book, I'll buy it.
Right.
And it's like they were lying.
They didn't buy it.
Okay, maybe some people bought it.
You bought it.
I have a copy.
A couple people got conned into buying a book.
Seen copies. I don't own a copy. But
when I joined Microsoft, I got told about the book because it ironically had just come out just as I joined. Mm-hmm. And that, Windows Internals, were the two main ones. Windows Internals, fourth edition at that point, so the NT, whatever it was, 2000 or whatever edition, 2003 edition, and that book. And they're the first two books I read when I got to Microsoft.
Oh, well, those are good ones to start with.
One of the problems with my book is that nobody knows where to shelf it.
Mm. I have it right next to my Windows Internals book.
No. Like, where do libraries and books shelve it?
Yeah.
Like, because it doesn't, like, because they have sections, like, they have an entire section, like, Java programming, right? You got three shelves of Java programming. It's like, where does this go? This goes into, like, sort of Windows programming and a little bit of stuff.
Not
some stories and a couple of jokes and, like, you know, it probably goes in the 000 section. It's like, I don't know where to put this book.
It's not troubleshooting either. It's actually approached to software development and stuff, so. Maybe under software. Yeah, you're right.
It's like Windows programming on all.
It basically gets the book gets put on its side on the bottom shelf with all the oversized books, right? It's like it doesn't. There's really no.
It's hard to categorize.
It just gets put in the miscellaneous category.
Yeah.
But I always like, because you have sort of common things that come up all the time on the blog too, that are like people email you about what they think is a security problem. And it's not actually a security flaw. They just don't really understand security, right?
Yeah.
There are a lot of security reports that come in that are real security reports.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I just don't talk about those because they're not funny.
Because they're not funny.
Yeah.
They're not entertaining.
I get to tell the entertaining ones, which is all the security reports that make no sense.
Yeah.
Or the ones that come sort of a not understanding how security works.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then the even inside that, there's a subheading called, it rather involved being on the other side of this airtight hatchway, which is a line stolen from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh.
So like Ford and Arthur are stuck and they're trying to escape.
Yeah.
And I think it's, Ford says, I've got an idea how we can get out. And he's like, what is it? Well, it rather involved us being on the other side of the airtight hatchway.
Yeah.
So I thought when I used that, everybody would get the reference because I'm a nerd and, you know, everybody's right for this, but apparently I have to explain it, sorry.
You know, it's ironic though, because I used to do banking software and we used to have airtight locks between, you know, the general populace and the server rooms.
Like literal
airtight locks.
Literal airlocks?
Yeah, airlocks.
Wow.
And so the server rooms had a room that only one person could go in, door came behind you, cleared, and then there's another layer. Now, a lot of it was to do with, you know, the Freon fire system and stuff like that, and stopping that coming out into the world and stuff like that. And it was also a security measure to make sure that only one person was going into the banking servers.
Mm. Right, you don't want anybody tailgating into that room.
No.
Right.
And when I read that, that's exactly what I thought, is like this airtight hatchway that's taken 5 minutes of my life hundreds of times. As you go clear.
Right.
It takes 5 minutes. They take blood.
Well, you had to wait for the security. No, you had to wait for the security guy. There was literally a security guy that you buzzed and he would
verify that you are you. Mm. And then say,
So that way, even if you had a badge of someone, this is before, it doesn't even
matter. Oh, I see. You couldn't just scan in as somebody.
No,
right. You would make sure the faces match, look you up in the database, make sure you hadn't been revoked, all that stuff.
Yeah. So.
Anyway,
that's what I thought.
Right.
That's not what it was. It's basically like in order to escape from this room, I have a great solution. The first step is to push that button that's outside the door.
Yeah.
Well, if you're already outside the door, then there's
really escaped.
You've already escaped.
I mean, most of these security things come down to, as an administrator, I can make an anti-service, tell it to run a system, and then make a command prompt, and I have access to do anything.
A lot of things are basically, if I'm an administrator, I can do bad thing X. And it's like, if you're an administrator, you don't need to do bad thing X in a clever way. You can just type format C colon and do a bad thing.
It's
really, true. You know, if you're an administrator, you're already in charge.
You're jumping hoops at that.
You're only defeating yourself at this point.
Yeah.
It's like, check it out, I just fooled myself.
It's like, if I'm a driver, I can crash the system in this weird way. Well, you can crash the system by calling KE bug check. I mean, there's a lot of ways.
You can task kill CRS RSS.
Yeah, exactly.
So what else? I know Microspeak is one of the other topics that comes up. How did that series of posts, and can you explain what it is?
Microspeak is sort of I didn't coin the word, but it's used to describe like the bizarre lingo used inside Microsoft that sounds kind of strange when people outside the bubble, people who grew up speaking it or people from like to use it, use it outside the bubble, and then other people look at it and say, you are talking a very strange language.
The word that I get dinged with is performant. Now, I don't think it's a Microspeak word.
Performant?
This program is performant. And it is actually in the dictionary, so it's not even a made-up word.
There are a lot of words in the dictionary that are basically made-up words.
Yeah, but that's one of the ones I always get dinged with. I say they're outside of Microsoft, and there's someone that looks at you.
Yeah, so some of it is like jargony terms, you know, like performant. Yeah. Some of it is sort of like metaphors that we tend to use a lot.
Yeah.
Like landing, you can land a feature, or when did this feature land in the trunk or whatever. And some of it is just verbal tics, like the use of the word super for everything.
Super.
And sometimes super, super.
That's like, every PM.
I am super excited.
Super excited. PM at Microsoft is super excited about something.
Like you could probably get totally sloshed playing the super excited drinking game at any product announcement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of verbs that have been turned into nouns. Like that, like we are landing something.
Was already a verb.
Yeah.
But
we use it as a noun. Yeah. When is the landing? You know, where is the landing?
I guess
you would have to say, when is the land?
When is
that
the land?
Yes,
that would be a good,
just made that up. It is now going to take the business world by storm.
It will. But I can never tell whether these are like Microsoft speak or whether these are just general business speak or whether we start stuff and it goes elsewhere or whether stuff sort of seeps.
Well, the problem is,
I don't really care. The point of Microspeak is not that these are words used only in Microsoft.
Yeah.
No. These are words that are probably used all through people in business language trying to sound cool.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that this word is particularly hot at Microsoft now, so if you want to sound cool at Microsoft, you should use it. Or more accurately, it's more like, if you hear this word at Microsoft, this is what it means because somebody is using it to sound cool.
I've always wondered about the psychology of that, of why people go with these sort of weird jargony words.
Is it,
when like a perfectly good word already exists, but they make up a new one?
A perfectly cromulent word.
Cromulent. Ooh.
That's from Simpsons. That's episode 3 of Simpsons, the Scrabble episode, where Boygy Biv, which is a raging man looking like an ape.
That was Quidjibo.
Quidjibo.
Your
Simpsons, because I know Raymond used to have.
I used to be part of the Simpsons subculture. That was for a few years, and then I grew up.
So has the Microspeak changed much? You've been here 20 odd years. You've been here 15-ish. Right?
So 17 something.
Has Microspeak evolved much, or do you just see the same thing over here?
Oh no, it's constantly like the new Microspeak that I haven't written up yet is North Star. That is the cool word that everybody's using now.
Really?
Only if you're in the Northern Hemisphere.
That's true.
I have the biggest issue with North Star.
Yeah.
Everybody we can't in the see it.
Nobody knows what the North Star is in the Southern Hemisphere. You don't talk
about
it.
There isn't one.
There isn't one.
There is no South Star.
There's a Southern Cross. Well, there is a Southern Cross. But
there's no like single star.
No,
like, that's
there's
one.
Not a Southern
Southern Pole star.
No, there's no star in the Southern Pole, but there is a way. The Southern Cross points to the Southern the South Pole.
So the South Pole up in the sky is sort of this imaginary point that you just sort of have to, It's that hole right there. Yeah. There's yes, no star just, right no. there that Correct. Says that's the one.
Right there. Yeah. See that where there's not a star?
That's the South Pole.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, whereas in the north, up in the northern hemisphere, there's we have a star that's right there. You just look at it.
We're lucky that way.
Yeah, I mean, I that was one of the ones that really tripped me up when I got here. I had to actually look up what North Star was.
What does North Star even mean? Like, I haven't heard this one.
It's like your guiding principle and your final goal.
Okay.
Because back in the old days, navigation used the North Star although this assumes that everybody's trying to head to the North Pole, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, that's the problem I had with it. It's like, you don't head towards the
North Star. You use the North Star to figure out where you're heading.
Navigation.
But that's not the way it's used.
But people actually use it at least the word North Star.
Our North Star is like our target.
Is our target. It's the thing we have to keep in our sights.
It's like our tenet. They used to call it a tenet or a pillar or something.
Yeah, but that's not cool anymore.
That's like 5 years ago.
Yeah, we don't talk about tenets anymore.
Okay.
I can tell you've been reading Specs from 5 years ago.
Well, actually, I have.
Yeah. So when I sit down and do a Microspeak article, I start doing, you know, sort of the lexicographer thing, you know, looking for citations, finding different use of the word, trying to find different, you know, usages of it. Maybe if I really have time, I can try to find an early usage, different usage. But the great thing about these Microspeak jargon is nobody ever defines the term. Mm. You have to infer the definition from all the ways people use it. And so, my definition of North Star, that's what I think it means. I don't know if that's actually what it means because nobody ever defines it. Everybody just uses the word.
Right.
It's like most slang terms, you know. It's like people just start talking about it, you know.
And you don't want to ask someone what it means because that identifies you as not being one of the in crowd, one of the cool people, right? So you just sort of have to figure it out.
No, actually, I like to do that.
You just ask people?
Well, it's like if there's like hey, some big meeting and a vice president uses some jargony word, I'm just going to raise my hand. It's like, what do you mean by blah? It's not they don't know either.
Yeah. There you go. That's the other approach. Just straight out ask them.
One of the other big words that when I joined Microsoft as a fun thing, my boss gave me this list of microspeak, right? Mm. And yeah, you can tell how many years you've been at Microsoft by how much
of it you recognize.
And a couple of them were particularly one that comes to mind is Bedlam.
So
outside of Microsoft, that's just a completely, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, Bedlam, I think, has a Wikipedia page now.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe it does.
So you can learn all about it.
Yeah.
So the short history of Bedlam is it was an exchange meltdown. Someone emailed someone, it was a broad distribution list, and then they did reply all saying, why am I on this list? And 3 days later,
please take me off this. How did I get on this?
Yeah, it was like a mailing list with a third of the company on it.
And
the thing is, like, I recommend that everybody go read Larry Ostman's essay on Bedlam because it's the sort of thing that normally would not have blown up Exchange, but due to the way we configure Exchange here, in order to force it to do more work, everything magnified.
Down it went. And so there's people which have T-shirts, I Survived Bedlam.
Yeah.
And there's Bedlam 2, right?
It was Bedlam DL3. Yeah. Bedlam DL3. Yeah.
No, but there's been it's happened twice, right?
It happens all the freaking time.
Yeah. No, but I meant at the point where it brings it down.
Where it brings down the mail servers? I think that's maybe happened twice.
Only once or twice.
Maybe once or twice.
The mail servers have since figured out, this is bad. I'm just going to ignore it.
But it does still, like, regularly you get these email storms.
Yeah, I know.
And you'd think, like, these are Microsoft people. They're pretty tech savvy. They would know not to, like, please take me off this list. Why am I getting these? But there's always enough. It only takes a few bad apples,
it takes
apples,
less than
right?
0.1% of 100,000 people to cause it.
The fun one is once there was one that was sent by an executive's assistant saying, please take the executive off this list.
Ooh, nice.
It's like, wow, that was impressive. It's like two people had to make a mistake for that one.
So you have posted, I don't know how many, like 1,000 blog entries over the years or more, thousands of blog entries on Old New Thing. How do you come up with all the content? I mean, a lot of times it seems like it's sort of customer questions that have come in over the years that you've identified as like...
Yeah, so I have a folder that I keep topics. That folder has like 10,000 items in it, so there's no shortage of topics.
Oh, wow.
How do you get around to doing that many? I mean, is it daily or... It is daily, right?
Back in the early days, I would write the blog topics in the morning while I was eating breakfast. Mm. And then they would, I would write them one day and then put, so initially I wrote them the morning they went up, which became kind of stressful because it's like, I gotta write something today. And then I learned that what I could do is I would get up and I would write them over breakfast. I would be eating my breakfast and writing. Mm. Then I realized what I could do is I could write two articles. I could post one today and save one for tomorrow. Ah. And so for a month or so, I wrote two articles every morning, posted one, saved the other. And that then I learned is like, I could just make this a regular thing. And so I would
queue them up.
I would queue them up. I would write something and I would try to write, you know, they're just like, I could like write five, just pound out five. Mm. In the early days, I didn't really care about the quality, so I could like put one together and kick it out in a half an hour or so. Now, I don't know, I'm old and I'm persnickety and I go back and edit like crazy, and so it takes a long time to put one up. So I used to have a buffer of a year and a half, it's down to 6 months. I need to sit down and just start writing some crappy stuff to get the buffer built up again.
Well, you just did a series on Itanium, which I actually personally enjoyed.
That Itanium series took forever to write.
Oh, yeah. Man, that was some deep stuff, too. Like,
yeah. That's obscure. That definitely is old new thing right there. This fits the name of the blog.
It was interesting, but I don't know how applicable it is.
That's a great thing, is I make no promise that this information will be useful. Yeah. These are stories that I like to tell. Topics that I get to choose the topic.
It definitely brought back some bad memories for me of trying to step through optimized Itanium code.
Itanium code, yeah, just makes your head spin.
I have to put you to the task and now do alpha.
I started doing the alpha, but, you know, it's
too long, guy.
Basically, I have to wait for my family to go on vacation and leave me behind. Then I have a week to myself, and then I can pound out another series.
Yeah. Cool. So, like, what were some of your favorite, like, blog posts that, you know, people that you just always think back on, or people reply or you refer back to a lot? Are there particular ones that, you know, really been big hits?
I don't know. There's no single, at least, I mean, there might be some that are big hits, but I don't know about it.
But people don't
contact me about it. I don't know which ones everybody keeps visiting.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, talk about visiting. So, how do you worry about the forum posts? How do you find time to? Because do you only look at the recent blog one, the recent post to worry about the comments?
I get email for every comment.
Triggered. Yeah.
Well, and the comments automatically, I think 2 weeks after every post goes up, the comments shut down.
Smart.
So, yeah, because they used to be on forever. Usually, for the first 2 weeks, you get interesting comments, and the rest of it is people like saying, make money fast, or hey, I have this problem. This article mentioned screensavers. I have a problem with my screensaver.
Yeah.
And so I was like, fine, go
please
away.
Please help.
It's better than Sarah Ford, man. She would get messages from people saying, hi. There was one article where she told a story about the time she met Bill Gates, and then all the comments on the post were people thinking that she was Bill Gates, saying, hi, Bill Gates, I have a problem, or I need money, can you give me some? Yeah, that was exciting.
I don't think we shut down the comments on our old videos.
Yeah, they are.
Are they? Okay, because I don't ever go back and look at them, so if people post
I look at the last four or five periodically
when I think about it. Yeah.
About a month worth. But I think they do shut down after about 2 months or something.
Yeah, so people are posting stuff on 6-month-old videos, I wouldn't know. But
and I mean, when defrag tools, just use defragtools@microsoft.com.
That's true. People email us all the time. So
yeah. Cool. Yeah. Well, I think we're kind of done our dash today. Don't keep it too long. So thank you for
thanks for coming by.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for the visit. We'll have to
thanks for giving me this cool microphone. I'll wear it every day.
Yeah.
You know, that way you need to like hook up a PA in here or something. You
can like
the voice of Raymond when people come in, you can like.
Attention, Microsoft employees.
That's exactly.
That would be awesome. I don't know what I would say though.
I don't know. You'll figure it out.
It is now disco time.
every midday, you could start narrating the old new thing to everybody. Today's old new thing broadcast.
No, if I had to do something every day, it would just be like, okay, dance party.
Dance party, yeah. They have to be something funny.
The problem is it would be a bunch of nerds dancing, and that's just not pretty.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of that around here.
Well, thank you again.
We'll yeah. Apology to all the cool nerds out there who can dance.
There are. Well. Hey, I can dance all right.
All right.
People tell me, but you know.
May they're just being nice.
The thing is, you just, I don't know. That's the key to being a good dancer.
Is you like don't care.
You don't care. You yeah. just like.
You just do it.
And alcohol. Really. Alcohol helps.
Alcohol, yeah, yes. Makes everybody a great
yeah,
dancer.
It's true. That's all true. Right. All right, well, thanks for watching. As always, if you have questions, comments, put them in the show notes down there or email us at defragtools@microsoft.com. And thanks for watching.
See you next week.